Radio Newark, the home of Radio Newark Sport. Weeknights from 7. Radio Newark Sport. Brought to you with Smith's Timber Merchants. For all your fencing, decking and DIY needs on Appleton Gate, Newark. Visit smithstimber.co.uk.
So after our two footballers coming here and entertained us, we decided to turn our attention to a different shaped ball for our Golden Oldies night this week. And we've gone, of course, to Kelham Road. And first question for Tony is, what do you call a pair of ex-presidents? Is it a gaggle of presidents?
I think you call them something politely, or sat right next to us.
A swarm of presidents? Or a greatness of presidents?
A bar of presidents.
A bar of presidents. Anyway, after a little bit of digging and a little bit help from one of my friends at Kelham Road, we decided to rechristen tonight, and we're calling it More Than Just Rugby, because it's not a rugby story we're going to tell. It's a story of lifetime in sport, and even that doesn't cover everything, as you'll find out in the next hour with our super guest. I'll keep you waiting just a little bit longer. As it's Tuesday, of course, it's Amber time.
Oh, good.
And Amber had a cracking weekend, a massive weekend for our young star. And we're going to talk to Amber at about 20 past 7. First of all, though, it's time for this. And we start with athletics and Tom Evans. He's tomorrow night's guest, by the way. Katie McIntosh and our very own Amber Owens representing Newark Athletic Club at the English Schools Championships. There was a podium finish for Tom and a personal best for Amber. She's going to tell us all about that at around about 20 past 7. Tutoree School got the sporting week off to a great start with their lacrosse and seven-a-side netball teams representing Newark in the county finals. The netballers came home with a silver medal, and five of them have been invited back for county practice. How good is that? And another good win for the Newark Tennis Club. This time it was their mixed team against Woodthorpe. And talking of tennis,
this is Radio Newark Sport.
The young lady that Tony Smith called an Hungarian Australian last night is in the semi-final.
Yeah, she's British now. She won.
I'm saying she's a Brit and Tony's got it wrong.
Okay, have I ever been wrong about tennis?
Yes, you have, all the time. You're rubbish at tennis. I didn't see it because I was studiously sitting here working on the show. You turned up at 7:02 because she was watching the tennis. Mm.
And the highlight of the tennis was not Konta's excellent victory and superb performance. It was the umpire, who sounds like the Count off Sesame Street. 40-30, absolutely brilliant. It was better than Morecambe and Wise.
25 years at the Newark Advertiser.
Yeah.
And that's what you get.
Well, come on, he must have read the stuff.
Sesame Street.
So we've got most of our stories.
Right, I'm not hanging about tonight because I want to get talking to these two, because we're only going to have 15 minutes and we could talk to these two to the rest of the night, to be honest, and still not cover the stories. One story I want to talk to you about, though. First of all, Silverstone. Their owners are expected, and they have announced, that they will activate the break clause in the contract that will cancel the British Grand Prix from 2019. They say, and they must be right because they're saying it, they're losing £3 to £4 million, and by 2019 they're going to be losing £5 million every time they host it. Did you know that they pay F1 £19 million for the rights to host the event?
Did you know that it's only the top 10 racing drivers actually get paid? The rest pay to be in it.
Crikey.
It is a very, very rich man's sport.
And did you know that Azerbaijan pay £50 million to host it, and Russia pay £38 million, and the government pays it because of what it supposedly brings in to the country?
And have you ever been
to Azerbaijan? No.
No.
Closest I got was Lowestoft.
But to a Grand Prix meeting?
No.
It's rubbish.
To be honest, I don't class Grand Prix these days as sport. Maybe when Jackie Stewart, Jack Brabham and all them was doing it,
I would agree with you.
But now it's who's got the most multi-million pound industry that can make the best car. You'd even put you in the thing and it would win.
But I used to go in the days when... I used to go in the days when they had overtaking. But when you get there, the cars are tiny, they look like dinky toys, and they go past you once every 10 minutes.
Yes, so it's boring.
It's better watching it on telly.
Boring, it really is. So I won't see it as a loss, but they are saying, why don't you take it to the streets of London? You'd have to get out of the way of the buses, but... yeah. Apart from that, why don't you take it to the streets of London?
They don't run that often, trust me.
Right. A greatness of presidents. That's what we've decided, isn't it?
All right, isn't
it? Yes, a greatness of presidents. Barry Thompson, Dickie Marshall.
Good evening. Hello.
Where do we start? We start by putting their mic up so we might hear them. Where do we start? Well, we don't start where I was going to start, because one of them's just announced he's got to go at 7:30. So we'll flip somewhat and start with Barry.
Hello, good evening.
Barry is, I sort of see him these days as the line judge at Kelham Road. He's there trying to keep the peace on the touchline when I go down to watch it. But this is what my spy at Kelham Road tells me about the man that we're going to talk to. Not for as long as I wanted to, so he's going to have to come back. Because Barry started in the Royal Navy.
Playing rugby
in the Royal Navy. Correct. Born near Skegness, and then they've also put that's where Bateman's is brewed. And I don't know where that all comes into it, but...
It's brewed at Wainfleet.
Ex-company director, worked in the textiles industry, ex-club president, good sportsman, still plays golf.
Correct.
You're a cyclist.
Correct.
And the Kelham Road spy, not as good a player as Dickie. Unquote.
Was this by Dickie?
Keen marathon runner. The real claim to fame is, of course, instigated the first Newark half marathon. We'll come back to that. You've run in the London Marathon.
Twice.
Keen volunteer. Worked as a volunteer at the London Olympics, the Ryder Cup. This is the one that intrigues me. Sings in the London Olympic Choir. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I need to correct you, though. The proper name is the Games Maker Choir.
You're not correcting me, you're correcting my spy.
Okay.
If you work out who the spy is before 8 o'clock...
I just don't want to be in trouble with the choir manager.
I've done a number of amateur dramatic roles in recent years, and panto. You're doing another one tonight, by the way.
Oh, no, he's not.
And your daughter works for the UN in New York.
That's right.
That's brilliant, isn't it? So I ain't got a clue where to start with all that lot. Let's just go right back, Barry, if we can, then. Where did you first find your love of rugby?
I first found love of rugby in the Royal Navy, as it were. I was a cross-country runner in the Royal Navy, believe it or not. Because I gave up cycling when I joined up, and just talking in the mess about sport and attitude to sport and fun, one of the guys on board said, try rugby if you think you're fit, if you think you enjoy a good competition, so come along. And I went along, played in a course rugby game, and I enjoyed it immensely. And what I doubly enjoyed was the après rugby, the fun afterwards. It was absolutely new to me, and I thought I was in heaven.
When did the Skegness man then arrive in Newark?
I didn't arrive in Newark until 1969. I married a Newark girl in 67, and we decided to move into Newark in 69 so that in-laws could be good babysitters, and literally fell in love with the place, and it's been, apart from 10 years where I had to go away, it's been my hometown ever since.
And the connection with Newark Rugby Club?
Well, I was playing rugby I was playing for Mellish when I went settled in Nottingham, came out of the Navy, settled in Nottingham. But then when we moved to Newark, I switched allegiances, went down to Newark. I got a call from lovely old George Pollard. He'd obviously got spies down Kelham Road as well, and agreed to play with him. And again, we've been with Newark ever since, yeah.
So how far does that Lions go back then? What,
69?
69, you joined.
How many years? I can't do my maths.
Dickie, you can't. If you want to join in now, you can do, but when he's gone off to his meeting at 7:30, it's all yours. But if you want to just join in...
First of all, I'm honoured that you think we are the... looks of the presidents.
Greatness of presidents.
We are honoured, because there have been some great presidents before and since us. So, I mean, we're we're honoured to be there, aren't we, really? Yes, but I joined about the same time as Barry. I was about 23, 24 when I joined.
So you've played rugby together, you've almost grown up together, and you've remained friends and colleagues.
We didn't play much together, did we?
Not that I can remember. No, I think Dickie was a bit too strong, a bit too aggressive for me.
We all know what Kelham Road is now. What was Kelham Road like in the 60s?
Great. Now, you could write paragraphs about the differences between then and now, but... I don't know, in the 60s, late 60s anyway, it was just absolutely fantastic. It was a question of how can you stay away? Look forward to training, look forward to, with great nervousness, to selection, look better even to playing, and the Saturday nights were just amazing.
You waited for the envelope or the little card to drop through the letterbox on a Wednesday from George Pollard saying that you've been selected wherever. And, I mean, we just wanted to play.
You see, this is the same, Tony. You heard this from Donny Age. You waited for the card on the Wednesday from George Lambert at Flowserve or Temo's. It's exactly the same. You lived for that card coming through the door and playing at the weekend. They don't now.
Now then, technology set in, and lovely old Bob Crowe right through late 60s and 70s, and then Trevor Lockwood. You'd wait for that phone call.
Is that our Bob Crowe then? Robert Crowe?
Sir Robert?
He was
my secretary.
All right.
I'd like to tell the story as well. In that time, to record music, you had to put your recorder next to the speaker. And I was recording Bohemian Rhapsody. And I've still got it on tape, where in the middle of it, Bob Crowe, there's ring, 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 ring. You're in the third team. Bloody third team? What is that? I scored last week. And I've got that on tape from 1970, whatever.
Mr. Crowe, tut-tut, fancy putting our president in the third team. I realise you've got to go, so I'm going to rush through one or two other things and then ask you to come back again in a couple of weeks' time, because there's a long, long story to tell. We'll do the London Marathon one and the marathon running. We'll stick with rugby tonight.
It's just while you were on that... Yeah. On that notification thing, because I've got a telegram here, 26th of March 1942, from Reddish, London Road, New Balderton, Newark. Get Pollard for Saturday if possible. Watkins. Isn't that fantastic?
Amazing.
The telegram.
How things change.
How things change.
Yeah.
In those days, it was supposedly the friendlies. There wasn't a league structure, was there?
No.
Was it friendlies?
Yes.
Or was it?
We used to have a chat in the scrum. On the wall.
Exactly. It was friendly. And a lot of my pals now are from other clubs that we played against. And I had a great colleague, Howard Walker, who played for years for Paviors. And we'd try and find out at work whether we were playing against one another on the Saturday. And if we were, he would say, you know, I'll give you one if I catch you. And I used to say, well, if you catch me, you can. And when he caught me and belted me, I retired.
How many years did you play rugby?
Oh, wow. I retired on my 40th birthday, 1984. So I played 25 years.
And the... And everlasting memories, if somebody said, what is the memory?
Of the rugby club?
Of you playing rugby.
Me playing rugby? I think my favourite memory is about my fifth game, when I was getting some idea of what rugby was about, when I was playing fullback. And caught the ball cleanly, which was something... Well, you used to call me Teflon Thompson, so you can imagine. I caught the ball cleanly and thought, right, this needs to go into touch. And I whacked it into touch. But I was going for the left-hand touch, but actually sliced it and made about 60 yards on the right-hand side.
Done with everyone.
Yeah. And one of my old pals in Huddersfield still remembers that kick with great... And I didn't tell him that it wasn't intentional.
And nowadays, you've still got a love for Newark Rugby Club, or else you wouldn't be doing the Lions.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We try and take a back seat, but when you've been involved for as many years as we have and been involved in every aspect of the club, it's tough taking a back seat, but we know we have to. But at the same time, we're there when needed. And right now, as you probably know, we go through a major, major change in the building, extensions to the building and so on. And I'm involved pretty heavily in raising the money to pay for that right now.
I was down there myself on Sunday morning with a Not Fast 10K, and it's coming along. Is it going to be all in order for the beginning of September?
The changing rooms will be. The changing rooms, I didn't go painting this morning, I should have done, but yeah, the new changing rooms to amazing standards will be ready for the new season. And we're already starting on phase two, which is the middle of the club, the offices and admin and kitchen and so on. Get that done, and hopefully we can then set a date for phase three, which is to replace, sadly, I think, but has
well,
to be done.
We've had this conversation with the current president.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's agreed live on here, and I've kept it somewhere. It's got to retain its atmosphere that it's got now. We don't want a soulless plastic place to drink beer out of a plastic jar. It's got if you go in there, it looks right, it smells right, everything is right about it being a sports club.
Well, that's been the catch 22 for the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years. We know that the club is tired. We know the clubhouse is, you go down in the daytime, you can see that it really needs refurbishing. But we also know that people come to our club and they say, this is what you call a real rugby club.
Yes.
And we've had agreements since we first started on this refurbishment programme that we will do whatever we can to retain the most amazing memorabilia that we've got and the atmosphere that visitors absolutely adore when they come to our place.
So that's two presidents that said it, Tony. I'll get the third one to say it before 8 o'clock. You've got to retain that. Very, very quickly, and I know you've got to go, very quickly though... The singing. In the London...
Well, I was going to apply to be an umpire after Tony's remarks about the tennis umpire, because he's a most amazing bass, got most amazing bass voice. But yeah, I was a volunteer at the Olympics, and they said some of those events change your life, and one of the things it did for me, I've always sung for fun, but during the Olympics... Victoria Verby, our leader, she decided to form a choir, and through the Gamesmaker newsletters asked for volunteers to gather together and sing, and I went along, and since then I've absolutely enjoyed it. I've gained a lot of confidence to sing, joined the operatics as a result of that, and sung at Wembley, sung at Twickenham, and sung at the Olympic Stadium, and this Saturday we've got a 20-minute slot at the Paralympics.
You're going to come back and tell us all about this. I know you've got to go. You've got to rush off, but you can please do come back, because there's a lot more on that little list that my spy has told me, and I shan't tell you his name, but let's just say he's a journalist as well. And we'll leave it at that. Barry, for the time being, thank you so much. It was an absolutely massive weekend for our young athletes with the English Schools Championships. The elite of Newark was there, and when you talk about the elite of Newark, you have to include Amber Owens. Good evening, Amber.
Good evening. You don't have to include me.
Yes, you do, because you are now the 10th best junior steeplechaser this country has got.
No, not really.
Yes. Where did you finish?
I finished, in the race, 10th, and there was 19 in my race.
Right, and that was the final, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a semi-final.
Right. Even my maths tell me you're now the 10th best.
Okay.
Right, you can't get away from that. Amber, that was a fantastic form, because you was telling us last week you was going to go for a personal best.
Yeah, but I
think I've got written down here, you thought you was ranked about 18th or something. A PB you got and a 10th place finish, you must be well pleased with yourself.
Yeah, I am pleased. It was what I wanted, a PB at the end of the day, and I wanted to come about. I knew I wouldn't win. I wanted to come in about the middle. And 10th is exactly in the middle, pretty much.
No, that is that is what we say. That is a result.
Yeah.
So that was good. That was fantastic.
Yeah.
The other two from the with Newark Athletic Club's colours under your Lincolnshire vests was Katie McIntosh and Tom Evans. Well, Tom's in here tomorrow night, so Tom can tell us all about it tomorrow. So tell me a bit about Katie.
Well, Katie, I mean, she obviously, for her, she was a bit unlucky. She had to have heats and finals for her 300 metre hurdles, and I think, I mean, she did her heat, and she did one in a heat. She was about third, I think, in a heat, third or fourth. But and she was quite happy because she got a PB, but I think, you know, she wanted to get in the final. But overall, I think she was quite happy because it was like the best one she's done. So,
but yeah. I mean, the company you're all with, you're with the elite of England, aren't you?
It is
as simple as that.
It's a lovely experience, because obviously we stayed over in Birmingham, and you stay with the team, and it's a lovely experience.
Is that the end of the big events for you now? What happens next?
That is pretty much the end of the big event. I mean, I've got a couple of, I think I've got another Northern, and I'll probably do a couple of Opens. I might do a Shamrock Open or a BMC, which is like another like extra event. Maybe I could get a time in. And maybe I want to try like a 2000 steeple chase, because obviously mine's 1500 metres. But yeah, I might do that. But yeah, pretty much.
Oh, good stuff. So, for a normal human being, after Friday and Saturday away from home, they would sort of go home and walk the dogs and have a lazy day.
Yeah.
No, not you. No. Go on, tell us where you was on Sunday.
Okay, so Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I was at Birmingham for the like race and staying over, and then Sunday I had another competition, and it was the Northern. It's the Northern League at Cleethorpes, which is under 17s and above. And yeah, shall I tell you all the results for that?
Fire away. You're our athletics correspondent.
Right, okay. So, Linton Taylor had a really good run, because, I mean, he's at university at the minute, so he came back and he won his 800 metres by, like, at least about 150 metres. He's really, really good. Becky Gallup, she had two PBs. She did the 1500 and got a PB, and then after that she decided she was going to do the 3000 and also got a PB.
This is the same Becky Gallup, Amber, that at roughly about 12 o'clock was still at Kelham Road.
Probably.
And then it was, as she put it, a fast car to Cleethorpes.
Yeah.
But isn't that like yourself, who didn't have to go after what you did on Thursday, Friday and Saturday? It's dedication, it's what it's all about, it's fantastic. Anyway, carry on.
Okay, and then Tilly got a PB in her hammer. Lauren got, me and Lauren ended up doing triple jump together. She had a really good competitive, she wanted to beat me in triple jump, but she didn't.
Aww.
It was funny.
Big sister wouldn't let her win.
No, I wouldn't let her win. And then me, I did obviously triple jump, and I also did 400 hurdles, and I got a PB in that. So that was quite good. And then Martin Waite, well, he usually does like longer runs.
Yes.
He decided, because obviously it's a team event, we needed people for 400 hurdles, so he ended up doing that. And then because like for his age group not many people do it, he ended up being about seventh in his age group, like in the country for his 400 hurdles.
But it's all points, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all points. And then as well, because obviously for the Northern League, we're joint with Rushcliffe. We had really good relay teams. Like, I think for the 100 metre relay, we won that one. And then it was me, Tilly and Lauren, and then Becky for the 400 relay, we came second. And then for the other 400 relay, we came second. And then Tom Brown, he had a good 100 metres run. I think it was close to his PB. And Tim also did well in the 3K steeplechase. And then Chloe Robbery had her season's best in Hammer.
And the best one of the lot was, once again, Becky Gallup did the shot put.
Oh, magic.
Did she? I didn't know that.
8.79 metres.
Ooh, that's really good.
She finished eighth.
Yeah, but that's still
but it's a point, isn't it? It's yeah. point. It's points. Points
she's
in the bag.
Thrower.
She's already built to be. She's already built to be a shot putter, is she?
I know her. Bless her.
Oh dear, Amber. That was an absolutely cracking weekend. Well done on Saturday.
Thank you.
Because that is, you know, that's superstardom. That is. You're on my wall of fame for that one. That really is good. What's Father say?
What's Father say?
Yes, because he can be your biggest critic, Dad can be your biggest critic and your biggest supporter. So what does he say about your performance?
Well, Dad was quite happy actually with my performance on Saturday. He was just annoyed that he wasn't there to have a photo at the end, because he wanted to capture the photos at the end of the race, but he wasn't there, so he was annoyed about that. But no, he was happy with my race.
Amber. And then, go on.
No, and I said, and then on Sunday he didn't go because he was at work, so he missed out on all the good times.
All the fun at Cleethorpes.
Yeah.
And did you all get to the beach and have some chips?
Yes, and we went swimming in the sea.
And you went swimming in the sea?
Yeah.
Well, that's close on insanity.
No, it was really warm on Sunday.
Was it? Right.
Yeah, it was at Cleethorpes. It was warm.
Dear, oh dear. Amber, thank you so much. You've been an absolute star talking to us about athletics. You've got nothing on this coming weekend then?
No, we haven't got anything on. We've just got training.
Right, well, I think we'll leave you in peace for a couple of weeks, and then we'll catch up with you again when you've got a meeting on.
Okay.
But Amber, well done to everybody at Newark Athletic Club, but primarily, I've told everybody at work I've been talking to the 10th best steeplechaser in this country. There you go. Because that's what you are, a star. Amber, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. And she's a star, isn't she, Tony?
Well, if she thinks Cleethorpes is a twin with Antigua, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's probably too much running in one weekend. But
I suppose it was a form of ice bath.
Yes, I suppose it is. Right, before we get to our second president of the evening, let's find out what's been going off on that stupid transfer market. Yes, you're supposed to talk, Tony. I left it to you to talk.
Oh.
And you didn't.
No. It's you should have got a professional to work with.
The football transfers didn't work, but we're not bothered about the football transfers because they're just a load of rumours and they don't work. What is not a rumour is now we're going to sit back and talk to our president, Dickie Marshall. And not a man from Skegness, a man from Newark.
A man from Newark.
Yeah. A man from Newark. So, Dickie, whereabouts in Newark was you?
I originally came from a little village called Beckingham, 5 miles down the A17.
Excellent. And same as Barry then, when did you find your love for rugby?
Well, that came about through my rowing. I was at the time rowing, and I'd gone down to the rowing club to go out with my first partner, Pete Haywood, and the river was fairly high, and we weren't able to go, and there's another guy there, Dougie Paddy, and he said, well, why don't you go have a game of rugby and look after you down there. So we went down to the rugby club. They found us some boots and some shorts, and we played our first game of rugby, never having touched a ball in our lives. And I think we were both put on the wing, so we didn't see much of the ball. And I believe Pete broke his ankle and never played again.
So what sort of age group was you?
I was about 23. I was 23 when I started, and
I suppose that was a bit late, really, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, but I stuck it out for about a month on the wing, not playing much rugby, and I said, "Oh, I'm a bit fed up with this. I'm not going to didn't fancy it much." So They said, "Oh, don't go away," and they put me on the back row, and I never moved. I played there most of my rugby career, really.
You mentioned rowing, and rowing before rugby then?
Yes.
This was Newark Rowing Club?
Newark Rowing Club. I went down there when I was about 12 to Cox. I sat on the bank and watched them, and I said I'd like to Cox, and they put me out, and I became quite not a bad Cox. Then I left that when I was about 16, and I started to box, did a bit of boxing.
This is going to be a multi-talented story, isn't it?
I boxed at Bingham. I travelled to Bingham twice a week, and trained with some good boxers. Johnny Pritchett,
who was Richardson European middleweight champion, he used to spar with Wally Swift, who was looking to challenge for the Richardson middleweight, and Johnny was an amateur then. Wally Swift came to Bingham to spar with him, to train up. And he went on and won it. Now, when Johnny turned professional, he came back to Bingham to spar, and he sparred with me. And he went on to beat Wally Swift.
Right. Rugby, rowing, boxing. Mm. What's the favourite?
Oh, that's so difficult. Yeah. I mean, if rowing's in your blood... I did it for such a long time, rowing, and to a fairly good standard, and it's in your blood. It's a team sport. Although I was mainly a sculler, but it is. You make some good friends, and they last for a lifetime. But rugby, I think, has been my social. I think rugby, because it's from 24, my kids have been through it. My son and my daughter, and my wife. We're all part of the rugby scene, right now. We're still there.
You was captain of the rowing club.
I was captain of the rowing club. Yeah.
What age was?
I'd be about that. 20, I can't remember quite honestly.
What's the rowing club like? What sort of roughly time are we now in the 70s?
Yes. Yes, 70s. Yes, it was the 70s.
I take it the new building where the
key... No, it was an old wooden building.
Yeah.
In fact, it was like the rugby club one. It was like a Nissan type of thing. Because I got married when I was in the 70s, and all the rowing lads were there, so it would be that time. But we were, at that time, as they are now, New York Rowing Club were well respected. Mm. We had some very good crews going out. Yeah, just go all over the country rowing. It was brilliant. Yeah,
the rugby, you've obviously, you know, you've got the bug for rugby and the social side that goes with rugby. And as Barry was telling us, in those days it was supposedly friendly matches, and before the league format started. Whereabouts did Newark go in those days? Who was you playing?
We'd go up to Boston. We'd go down to Boston, up to Scunthorpe that way. Mansfield were our main on the west side. So it was all the local clubs. It was kept fairly. You didn't go that too far away.
Is there always a rivalry between Mansfield and Newark? Was there in those days?
Yes, they were battles, really. they were quite hard games. And that's how we respected each other. You know, they respected us, and we respected them. And after the game, you'd go in there, and if you'd have a bit of a battle with someone, you'd buy each other a pint and have a laugh and a talk about it, and you remain friends. You can go anywhere now and you come across a Mansfield guy and you'd be friends. I mean, the guys who have been to New Zealand right now, they'll meet lots of rugby people that they've played against, and it'd be brilliant, you know.
Brian Moore was a solicitor in Newark.
Yes.
When he made his debut for England. and I watched him on grandstand make his debut against France at the Parc des Princes, and he sang the national anthem with his head thrown back and his chest stuck out with such gusto.
Yeah.
And the following Monday or Tuesday I interviewed him again for the advertiser, and I said, I couldn't help noticing, Brian, when they sang the national anthem, you did so with such great pride and passion. And he said, I hate the blooming song, but you get fined if you don't sing it. Good Halifax lads, Brian. but I was reading the Daily Telegraph the Daily Telegraph sports section yesterday, and he said, but the Lions' memories are the best of all.
I bet they are. Yeah.
And then so that was what a fantastic achievement that was on
amazing.
Saturday.
See, you have all that rivalry between them here.
Yeah.
And then they get together, and that must be absolutely brilliant.
But that is the greatest thing, I think, about rugby union, and rugby league, in fairness, that you batter somebody to the point of death on the pitch, and then seek them out in the bar afterwards to sort of have a beer with them. Your opposing number that you've been scrapping for 80 minutes with. And I think that's what makes the sport so fantastic.
It does, yeah.
That's what pulls it apart, that's what takes it apart from football. We've talked about the boxer. We haven't yet talked about the cyclist. And I just want to make sure I get this cycling bit in before we run out of time. So I'm going to jump about a little bit. Dickie Marshall, the cyclist. Two things I've sort of been given is that you've done the Land's End to John O'Groats twice, and the reason you did it for the second time is you didn't think the first one was quick enough. That can't be true, can it?
I did it the first time. I did it with all my package, all my panniers on, and carried all my stuff with my son Lee on a good road bike, but not a proper road bike. And I thought I could probably do it a bit better on a bit more of a racing bike, road bike. But it turned out against me because, as you know, you go from south to north with the prevailing wind, north and south westerly, hitting you on the shoulder. First day that did happen, and I've reported this bike. The next 8 days, I had torrential rain and wind on the other shoulder coming right at me. So it was hell.
You actually reported them to us, didn't you? Yeah.
Yes.
What on the two of them? Obviously, the best scenery and the most gorgeous time you had was Cornwall. That's obvious. But what's the everlasting memories of them?
The first one. Well, they're both very emotional, for more or less the same reasons. Because I raised money for two dear friends, but. The second one, I did it for completely on my own. I didn't see another rider from start to finish along the road. With it raining so much, I didn't have any flies, so that was a bonus. the first one, I did it for our old friend Charlie Furze, as you know. And that was emotional, thinking about it all the way, because I had his journal. So two different sort of stories, really, yeah. Yeah.
And then to sort of complete this, was your cyclist in, I say your younger day, because you're still young at heart, what you're doing, you're young. Was your cyclist in the younger days? Or,
No. I didn't start cycling until I was like 65.
See, there's still time for you, Tony.
Yes, last time I was on a bike, I broke my thumb.
I'm not going to go there.
I hit a hedge at speed.
You recently, though, did the great Knotsham bike ride, and I'm told at the age of 71 you did it.
Yes, I did, yeah. Well, I entered first.
Total
of all,
admiration.
I entered the Market Raisin Epic, which was 100 miles. I thought, up there, it's pretty flat up there in the fens. Got that one wrong. That was horrendous. It was so windy and there were so many hills. So then I trained up a bit and entered this, the
Great Knots.
Great Knots, and the Sheriff of Nottingham one. Again, that was 100. And I was very pleased with that. I did a lot better, yeah.
And anything on the cycling horizon then? Or is that one ticked off along with rowing and sort of boxing and rugby?
I would like to do from coast to coast. And I think your secret
man was going to be my backup man, I think.
Oh, right.
Mm. That's what he said, anyway.
Oh, right.
That's the one.
I think I know who it is.
is that the one we can't name?
Yeah.
What, my spy?
Yeah, Rob Bellman.
Yeah, that's the one. we had a very interesting evening last night, you made than each other. So, is the coast to coast likely to?
It's got to be pretty quick because it's darkening now. So,
yes.
I don't know whether I should say this. No. It's 140 miles and it's a long way in a day.
Mm.
So, if you're going to do it in the day, you've got to start early and finish late. And everybody says I can't do it, but I don't know.
Well, yeah.
Sounds like a challenge,
doesn't it? Sounds like a challenge, that does. Rob also tells me that we know you was born in Beckham, we know you're a Newarker. 14 children in the family.
Yeah, 14. I'm very proud to be the youngest of 14.
The youngest?
Mm.
And you was the first boy in a long line of girls?
Yes, there was a number of girls before me, and of course when I came along, I was spoiled to death. Made a big fuss of me because my mum was getting on and obviously going to be the last one. So, yes, I was looked after.
So you...
Well, my sisters. apart from my sister, who was just older than me, she was very jealous of me, of course.
It sounds like you'll go to heaven, Dickie. Yeah.
What sort of child was...
Amazing.
Yeah?
Brilliant. Brilliant, yeah. We had a five-bedroom house. Big garden, so everybody had the chores to do and work, you know. But very happy, very strict, always very strict, but very happy. Lots of laughter and fun.
And isn't that what it's supposed to be about, isn't it? That's what.
Oh yeah.
Being a child is.
And our family stays very close all the time. Yeah, there's only five of us left now, but but it was very good, brilliant. Yeah, my mum and dad were amazing, obviously.
Good stuff. Mm. Let's go back to Newark and talk about your playing career a little bit at Newark.
I wasn't a brilliant rugby player. I had certain attributes. but I worked my way up into the first team. What are you laughing at?
Well, that's got Tony going.
I thought Fuggery was the main one.
But I did work my way up into the first team, and I got to be captain of the third team. And when I was captain, it was quite a successful a couple of seasons I had there. Yeah. And then from there, I went back down to the fourth team. And after that, I looked after the mini and youth, my wife and myself. And we built that up to 200 strong when I left it. And of course, you see what that's developed into.
Hmm.
What else? And then, of course, I carried on and they made me president. So that was a big honour for me. Yeah.
Well, as you both said earlier on, if you look at the list of ex-presidents...
Amazing.
I mean, I am right in the greatness of presidents, because if you line the Newark Rugby Club presidents up, you've got the great and the good of this town, really.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it must have been an honour to be president.
Yeah.
What's your memories of your term?
It was a time when coaches were coming in. Up until that time, we were self-coached in grown people, but we went out and got a paid coach. Neil Mallock was our first paid coach, and I think I talked to you a bit about it.
Yeah, yeah.
At that time,
that's right.
And he was a very good coach, and it was a bit of a delicate subject at the time, because and some were doing it, some weren't. Are you paying people? We never paid players, but we paid a coach. So that was a little bit touchy that around that era. Yeah,
it was a very difficult time because we went over to play. Who was
Ellis?
It?
Was it Messi?
No, it was Stoke. Went over to play Stoke in a friendly just before Christmas, and I was in a car with Richard Ewins,
yeah, he was
present. And Charlie Fears.
Yes.
And I was sat in the back, and they had a conversation on the way back, and Stoke obviously had two England B players that weren't Stoke lads, and they were playing for Stoke for a very specific reason.
Exactly, yeah.
And the conversation in the car on the way home was, we're going to have to think about going professional at some stage because, you know, that's the way the game is going and we're going to get so much out of sync. And then I wrote a Sports Thoughts column the following day, and because Richard was a solicitor, I phoned him at work and I read the column to him, and he said, I'll tell you something, that's exactly right. But if you print it, we'll have to play rugby league next week. So I've been that one.
Yeah, I thought that was coming, yeah.
Not the first one, all the last that got binned.
Yeah, but this is my choice. I want the editor.
Dickie, there's been an awful lot said in the past and still being said regarding exactly the point that you two are talking about, and that's paying players. Newark Rugby Club, as a club, is in a fantastic position. Mm-hmm. Newark Rugby Club's first team is possibly not where they want to be.
No.
And maybe the only way out of that is to look out of town and do that. I would personally rather you stay where you was and keep the ethos that you've got. Where do you stand on all this?
I think that would be great, that would be good, but we've no longer got the Magnus coming through, and that's where a lot of our strength came through, right through that era of rugby. A lot of our good players have come from Magnus. We no longer have that. The schools don't play it anymore, you know. And we used to have coaches that used to go and help them along with it, but it doesn't happen. The teachers don't do it. Kings do it, of course, and they're very successful. But so you have to spread the net a bit, and you've got to do something to attract them. And hopefully, I mean, the clubhouse that we're doing is a big asset, it's going to be, but you've got to get the right coaches and the right sort of ethos and stuff to go with it.
The other one I'd love to hear your comments on is that when youth started in the 70s, it was a man's sport played by 6 foot square-shouldered, muscle-bound men who could drink 20 pints at night time. Now, rugby clubs have thriving ladies and girls section. And I know what you're going to say. It took 51 minutes to bring them into the conversation, but they are now that girls section are an integral part of New York Rugby Club. Could you ever see that in your presidential days?
I tell you what, now you've touched on a when I was looking after the mini and youth, Jeff Mapp, he used to come and coach, and he brought girls in, and I I can tell a story,
and I can only get thrown off.
I said, we don't want girls. It's not a sport for girls. You can't tell boys to tackle girls, and they're gentlemen. They should treat them with respect. But of course, they came in, and now we've got one of the best, as you know, girls rugby thing. But the other thing, Claire Hodnott, who's the referee.
Yeah.
When I was manager of the fourths, she was put to referee my fourth team, and I said, I'm not having a girl referee. And I've never lived that down.
And look at her now, world
Claire
class.
And myself, I've been made up since then. But it's like someone said, Dusty Air will never be a goal kicker. Well, he's got that already.
not a bad record.
Was that one of your comments?
No.
Jeff Coleman, that
I suppose when you finally do sit down and sort of look back at a great sporting career, your legacy, from what you told me in the last half an hour, has got to be the youth section at Newark and building that up, because I would suggest now, pretty much like the girls, that youth section is second to none.
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. They are going from strength to strength, and they've got some very good coaches, all in, lot of inbred coaches, fathers that have come through, play good first team rugby and lesser, but they're looked after brilliantly and nurtured along. And of course, the only thing about that, when they get good, they get snapped up by the you know, the academies, so they don't get then to play in the senior side. Some to come back, and you know they're brilliant, and they do strengthen all our sides. But that's the thing, and then they go to university, and what happens? They get sucked into the bigger world.
Where do you see grassroots rugby and professional rugby, as it is now with the Premiership? Where will that take rugby? Will it ruin it like it's the money ruin, like it's arguably ruined football?
I hope not. I just hope not. They've just got to keep their feet on the ground and treat it as a, you know, a good family. Well, that's what we like to do at Newark, I suppose, but it takes over. It's money, isn't it? It's money all the time.
Well, it seems to be, and, you know, that is a... It is a worry, and clubs like Newark have got to continue to exist, haven't they?
We have got a good all-round, the social side and the helpers that remain in the club, a good structure of people from the top all the way down, with parents and older players, senior players that have come through. It's a solid structure, and it's going from strength to strength.
I've said that I think that should be your legacy. Your highlight of your sporting life, then? We asked Barry that question, but I'm going to throw it open, because you're not just a rugby man, you're a rower, you're a boxer, you're a cyclist, you're a golfer, you're a rugby player, you're everything. You're a runner. We haven't touched that one either, because you've done the London Marathon, and there's a story. Very quickly, the story you told me before we started, your London Marathon.
Yes, I was 40, I think I was 45 when I did it, and I ran for the Not Fast, and I got an entry. Very nervous, I was on my own, I didn't see any of the other Not Fast guys. Set off, I got some new shoes and I got blisters about 10, 15 miles round, and I was in a tunnel and I couldn't get off, and I'd hit the wall, as they say, and I could feel me getting very emotional, and I cried. I was in such pain, but I couldn't get off, and I was just going through it, big old barriers along the side, and there somebody said, "Oh, it's Dickie, what's he doing here?" And then I looked at the mile register, and it said 18 miles. I thought, well, not far to go, really. So I carried on, got another lease of life, got over that wall, and I managed to do it in 2 hours 57 minutes.
2:57.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. But hang on, Tony, quickly, there's a but.
As I was going through the finish, all these cameras came rushing towards me, and I didn't think much to it, and I got over, and of course, they make you feel as if you've won it, you know. It's an amazing feeling that the people who are there, they think, oh, I didn't know if I won it or what. Anyway, I turned round, and they said, oh, that's Zeb Coe. And I'd only gone and beat Zeb Coe. It was his retirement race after he finished all his athletics. He wanted to do the London Marathon, and I picked him. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
I got him a drink and took it to him. There I was, and I said, "You deserve it."
I told you tonight was in the presence of stars, didn't I? And there you go, Dickie Marshall, the man that beat Zeb Coe. What more can you say? Dickie, it's been fantastic. I'm so pleased that you've come in to see us, and I'm sure there's lots of more stories to tell, and we'll have to do it again sometime. Tomorrow, we're on athletics with the chairman of Newark Athletic Club and his son, in other words, Don and Tom Evans. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.